Hey everyone, just a quick spoiler alert before we get started. Today we're going to talk about American Horror Story Roanoke up to episode 4, Westworld season 1 episode 1, Atlanta season 1 episode 6, Designated Survivor season 1 episode 3, and Transparent all of season 3. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, and welcome back to SCTV for ScreeningClub.com, where we break down the latest in television entertainment each week for you. I'm here, as always, with my associates, my brother Chris and our good friend Mike. How's it going this week, guys?
Hey, good. How are you?
Not bad. Welcome back.
Nice. Hey, before we get into this, into our reviews and our thoughts on the on this week of television, I have a story.
A story.
Just like something happened to me that's TV related. It's going to be on topic, but it's just, I think I thought you guys would like it.
Hit us up with it, man. Let's do it.
Okay, so you guys know, I don't know if Mike knows, but I like to go to flea markets and look for old video games.
Sure.
I've heard about this, yes.
Yep. I'm not going to say which, because I'm no snitch.
Ooh.
But.
So this is like a.
It's a little.
Shady story.
This guy's not on the level that I meant. Okay. So anyway, I was searching through this flea market. It's a big indoor one. Going through, I'm in the electronics area, and there's a lot of booths selling games, selling TVs and stuff. And then this guy starts talking about cable channels. He's like, hey, you watch HBO? You watch blah, blah, blah? He's talking not to me, but to like a crowd, like kind of like a carnival barker. And he's like, hey, never pay for cable ever again. People are like, what? Never pay for cable? He goes, he brings out these weird looking, almost like Android boxes, like streaming boxes. And he says, I hacked the system. You buy one of these boxes, you get all cable channels for free forever.
I've heard about this phenomenon, Chris.
Yeah. I had never heard about it. But then I thought, and people were loving it. People were buying it. I don't know how much they were selling for, but I thought to myself, you have no idea what sort of code is on this. You're going to just bring this strange box to your house and hook it up to your system.
And people were buying them?
People were buying them.
I've seen people, even like pictures of people at trade shows selling like hacked, Android Fire Sticks or whatever they're
called. To make a long story short, Chris bought one and then 2 weeks later had his identity stolen.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting. Maybe some of you guys that are listening have one of these boxes and it works perfectly for you. That's awesome. But I would be too paranoid to have a mysterious hacked box in my home network.
That man later took a small business loan in Chris's name. Was it worth it, Chris?
It was. I got to watch Westworld for free. So.
Oh, you wouldn't have otherwise watched it.
All even in the end, I guess.
I like it. And speaking of Westworld, we had the premiere episode this week. I know we all tuned in. Give me some initial thoughts. This was a big premiere.
Yeah, it's big. It's HBO's new big show that they're pushing. I think they've been seeing the end of Game of Thrones on the horizon, so they've been trying to search for another hour-long hyper-violent, hyper nudity packed in some cases.
Hyper expensive.
Yep.
Hyper epic.
Yeah.
Hyper kind of, genre infused.
Exactly. Yeah. To kind of take over for that. And I'm not sure. Well, how did you like it, Mike?
I was impressed by the production values, cinematography. I thought the pilot contained some pretty impressive action set pieces, some really interesting musical choices, that Paint It Black interlude. Mm-hmm.
Orchestral cover.
Orchestral cover was pretty impressive. But I was ultimately left feeling as though the show didn't do enough to present its purpose, to present what exactly it is, who exactly it's about. I'm not even sure the show really presented like a clear protagonist at the center. It is such an ensemble show, but I wasn't sure if there was any sort of audience surrogate, any sort of POV character within the whole entire cast, as most shows like this are one to introduce. I liked it, but I was sort of left more interested and intrigued by where it's going and what it might become than what this one episode itself delivered.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing about this show. It could go so many different ways, and the way I'm hoping it goes, which is a lot of what I really liked about the first episode, is like the concept of consciousness and what it is to be human, and if they go in that direction with at what point does artificial intelligence become conscious enough to be considered human or human-like to have the same rights. I think that's where it's going to be really cool.
It asks that big, broad philosophical question that we've seen in so many other genre-type media.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how specific it's going to get into that. I imagine it will. But overall, pretty decent hour of TV.
I actually really enjoyed it. I thought the entire heist sequence with the painted black was amazing from start to finish. And even before that in the bar, it had Black Hole Sun playing on the piano. So I think kind of bringing in the future tech with the old West, I just find that really great setting to be in. It just seems to be fun to just be in that world. But I agree with you. It's a little bit aimless right now. And if the season goes on and they start pinpointing what the show is actually about and start giving you someone to root for, I'd definitely be into it more. But I've been really enjoying it so far. What did you think, Jeff?
I absolutely loved it. I was into it. Even the opening credits, it pulled me right in.
They are amazing. Yeah.
Like, that was really cool. The music, too. I really, the music, like, a big thing to me. Just really cool visuals and just that sort of, like, creepy melody on the piano. Oh, it was so cool. I mean, I was thinking about the artificial intelligence stuff, too. I mean, it definitely seems to me like, I think, though, the farmer's daughter, I think Dolores is probably going to be like the main person.
Yeah, I think so too. They said she was the oldest robot in the park, and if she got uploaded with those reveries, as they were called in the show, then she would have the most history to call back on and to build consciousness upon, if that's how that in fact works, especially if the way you break out of this loop is through memories really affecting you. We saw through the Man in Black that she's had some of the most horrific memories you could possibly have. Yeah. So if she's tapping into that, it could really push her out of that. If obviously this is all conjecture, if that's actually how that works.
I mean, it was just, like you mentioned, Mike, they fit so much in there, but really, I was just intrigued by everything. I thought it was so cool, so much going on. I thought awesome, like casting, like I was like buying into everyone.
It is a hell of a cast. I can't believe like the A-list talent that they have working on the show.
And Dr. Narcisse is back.
Dr. Narcisse
on HBO.
They got Anthony Hopkins and Evan Rachel Wood, James Marsden, who I'm not even sure where he fits into all this.
Yeah.
His character.
What a switcheroo with him at the beginning, because we were supposed to think that he was a guest, right?
Well,
right.
I mean, I thought he was a guest. In the movie, he is a guest, and the guy that we thought was a bad robot is a bad robot. So the show is actually changing some things around.
The Ed Harris character?
Yeah, the Ed Harris character.
His character may have been the most problematic of the episode, because we are left with really zero inclination for what he's up to.
His storyline could definitely be the coolest, though, if who plays the creator, Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins.
If Anthony Hopkins did create a deeper level of this game, as he kept saying, and it has something to do with the symbol on the inside of the scalp,
right,
that we saw. And if you watch some of the trailers, that symbol shows up in in a few other places. If there is this deeper level of meaning, I think that could definitely be some cool stuff. But right now we don't know that, so it's kind of just this guy being violent.
I just have a question about the mechanics and the logistics of this theme park simulation. I don't think the episode really did enough to establish how this all works. Did you get
how
a good idea?
How the tech works.
The whole simulation.
Where is this?
The intermingling of these robotic beings with the actual guests. Like, where are the guests? Like, are they teleported into an alternate realm? Or are they functioning on that lower level where all the robots seem to be?
That brings up something else to me. And it seems, Chris, have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen the movie, but there's a famous image from the movie, which is the Man in Black character's face opens up and you see the robot beneath. Obviously, we're not going to get that in the show, so it's not a spoiler, because he's a human.
Could be a robot.
Are they in this Wild West?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a physical. Is it out in the desert somewhere and they cornered it off?
Here's my question, because we got the scene with, I forget her name, but it was Lee, the British guy, and then the in charge woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Teresa. They're talking, and that's really the only scene we get that's removed from everything, I think, because they're not in the inner workings, and they're not in Westworld. They're outside looking over a plane or something. And he mentions, when are you rotating out or something? Which obviously means they're in some deserted location. But then that got me thinking, is this some deserted location on Earth, or is this it could be
it definitely could be
space.
Well, as my it
could be anything.
My favorite scene in the entire episode was when they go down into the bowels and they look through the storage area and they find Anthony Hopkins and he's meeting with the first gen version.
So cool. Yeah. I thought it was so cool.
No idea how they did that. It's some amazing effects. They must have recorded a man taking those lines and then added in his jitteriness later.
Yeah.
To seem like a first gen version of the robots.
It was so cool.
But to your point, Jeff, in that scene, or I think it was that scene, but it might have been in another scene with him and keep calling him Dr. Narcisse because I love Boardwalk so much and I forget his character's name. But they were talking about how they've gotten to the apex of human evolution. And these robots are could be the next step of human evolution. But if this world has gotten so far, it wouldn't surprise me that this is on a completely different desert planet somewhere.
You're talking about the lead doctor guy?
Yeah.
I think his name is Bernard.
Bernard, yep, that's it.
he had some interesting stuff going on, too. Like, the interaction with, I guess, is it the head security guy?
Yeah.
They were sort of butting heads. I was wondering that, too. He tells him he has no children. Then we see him later looking at a picture of a child. Is it could there be this, riffing off of what you said, does he have his own reasoning for trying to push this artificial life thing? Because isn't there some talk of bringing people back, bringing their consciousness back?
Calling upon Lazarus.
I don't know.
It's defeating the angel of death.
It's interesting.
That's some of the... I love philosophical stuff like that, and adding in the nature of AI is really cool. And if it becomes a show that isn't just about violence, which, I mean, it's some of the most well-shot violence you can get on TV right now, but if it becomes a step above that, I can definitely see myself loving this show even more than I do.
I mean, just so cool. And like you said, Mike, we didn't... It would have been impossible to give us the complete lowdown on how the whole world works, but
that's
just
true.
the little snippets that they introduced, I mean, there's so much more to unravel there. It's going to be really interesting just experiencing where it goes.
Yeah, can't wait to find out.
Very cool. Any other thoughts for next episode? Anything you're looking forward to? Anything?
Well, at the time of this, the recording of this podcast, episode 2 was already available on demand.
I did see that. I haven't watched it yet.
HBO trying to sidestep the presidential debate on Sunday night. But
there you go.
Definitely excited to see that. I'm excited to see the rest of the show, how it just sort of narrows down just exactly what it is, like the main plot threads of the season, the core characters that will be driving it. I'm definitely on board this show.
I'll be watching.
It's actually cool to note that they did that, adding the second episode on HBO Go early when Game of Thrones first launched its first season. But they actually launched HBO Go with Game of Thrones at the same time.
Ah.
So I think that might comment on how confident they feel about both shows if they're pushing people.
They have
to
a lot riding on this show. It was not of the most peaceful early production.
Mm-hmm. Got delayed for a while, I think.
Lots of delays, lots of...
There were some casting controversies.
Casting, writing issues. So they have a lot riding on this, a lot of high expectations, as well as a lot of public pressure to really deliver on it. So
that's going to be interesting going forward.
Hoping that they do.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. Speaking of absolute love, let's talk a little Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're on episode 6 this past week, right?
Yep.
Got a little van episode. Full, almost full episode. What do you guys think?
It was the van episode we didn't know we wanted or needed.
Yeah.
But I came away absolutely loving it. I was so impressed that they can just pluck this seemingly side character that hadn't received so much screen time in the first 5 episodes. They pluck her, they bring her to the front, and she delivers a powerhouse half hour of TV.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not to make it all about Donald Glover, because I think I have the person who plays Van here. Zazie Beetz. Amazing name. Because she was obviously amazing in this episode. But last week I talked about Donald Glover's maturity of not focusing too much on him. And it's interesting that the next week he was literally only in one scene and you barely see his face.
It's true.
Like, to make an episode that's so strong and proving that this side character is not just going to be a stereotyped nagging ex-lover, right, that she actually has.
She has her own insecurities, her own problems, her own just negative aspects about her.
And even more so, the entire, like, a major theme of the episode was about value and how much she harped on value, and now her character actually has value in the show beyond just what we've seen from her before. It was an awesome episode, and it kind of recontextualizes her character going forward too, which is even going to be better.
Yeah, I think the episode was called Value too.
Oh, really?
It surprised me. Just so cool just to dive into that, and just well done, and not like I was not bored. It was very cool to see all of that. Just watching from her point of view with like the little interactions and although there was, I found the diaper scene to be so disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting.
Hilariously disgusting.
Well, I don't know. It was
extremely
disgusting.
Fun to watch. It was like a fun capper all about baby urine.
Yeah.
And it even ended kind of predictably. Like, you got the sense as soon as she went into that bathroom that condom full of piss was going to erupt in her face.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But just the whole execution of that scene up until that point was terrific.
You know, some really cool interactions, too. So I think we open, and it's the restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And her friend.
The first half of the episode was just at this restaurant with this friend.
Her friend, Jade, who's like this... So stereotypical, like how a wealthy black woman is portrayed on TV. Like, I really felt like that.
I feel like she almost represented like an alternate life that Van could have had at a certain point in her earlier.
That's a good point.
Sure.
But she veered off into a different path, and it was just her reckoning with the life she could have had, the life she could have led, with the life she presently has. And then to contrast that up against this whole theme of value, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. Was that woman a high-class prostitute? Is that what it was? I know it was a little vague.
I thought really it was unclear. More... I think the show kind of left it vague on purpose, just exactly what she does.
Yeah.
I thought it was, it was left open, but I thought it was more just she targets sure. these... Like
yeah, when she said she provides a service. I don't know if she meant literally like she provides.
Yeah,
she provides sex to NBA stars. She provides a lot of other
things. Yeah,
it was that the interactions between them and just sort of like clearly they know each other so well, but the little barbs and like oh little thing, and then another. I just thought it was very interesting watching her. So. When she has the interaction with Al, when she calls him, like, that was so funny to me. He's just on his couch watching cartoons or something, and he picks up, and he's so like, what the hell is this?
And it was clear that they have, like, their own history that we really haven't delved too deep into
yeah.
so far. But it was just fun to allude to the past that exists between these two characters. I would really like to get some more screen time between them going forward. Mm-hmm.
Also, two times he gets pissed about her being too open about his drug deal.
Too messy.
In an episode he's not much in. He's not featured much.
Just a text on a phone.
He steals the show.
I saved the text and wrote it down here so we would have it. So he reaches out to her though, which is a nice thing. I mean, I guess he's trying not to mess up the relationship with Earn and stuff too, but he reaches out and then the text is, how much for an eighth? I don't sell. Save my name as someone else. Girl, you sloppy. Yep. That was just so cool. Another scene that really got me was, I don't know if she was the principal or whoever her boss was.
That scene was brutal.
What a crazy scene. Like, you just that woman was so like in control, very calm, like nurturing almost. Oh, everyone does it. It's fine. I'm gonna have to fire you though. Like it was so. And then she
plays it off like she's doing her this favor. Like I forget exactly what she said.
She said like we'll pretend like we had this conversation on Friday, so you can have the week to get your things in order.
Give her some time or something. Yeah. Oh, it's because it was probably earlier.
It's probably Monday.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a dynamic there. Like, just this another, like, she's thinking it's a, like, she's so worried going in, then she thinks, oh, I can't believe it's going to work out. The sick joke is that
she wouldn't have been caught either way because they don't send the urine, the sample out.
Yeah.
Oh,
just to keep them on their toes.
And just thinking about, like, placing this next to last week's episode, the Bieber episode, like what a different, like everything was so. Yeah,
I know we got a lot of Darius last week, but I'm ready for the Darius power hour.
I would love that. It must be.
What
coming,
about Darius's
right?
value in all of this?
Yeah, where is Darius's
value?
He's
got some value. I almost feel like, and this might even be by design. It probably is, but like Earn, I think at this point is by far like the least interesting character, even though he is the central protagonist and the star of the show. But everyone else, they have so much else going on.
Well, they've alluded to Earn's back, like Paperboy called him Princeton, and he didn't want to talk about why he wasn't at Princeton anymore. So there is some backstory that I assume we'll get later in the season.
He said that to Darius? Oh, no, you said Earn.
To Earn. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't remember that. Earn,
it was alluded to that Earn had gone to Princeton.
Interesting.
And now he's home, and why? And we don't know why he's had to have this life-changing.
Okay.
Like why he's in this new situation.
Even in, like, the... How much screen time did he get, like...
Earn?
60 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, 60 seconds. And most of it, his back, his like face was away from the camera.
But the dynamic there, like even in that little while, like it showed he was trying to take some more responsibility with the kid, right?
Yeah.
It really, it did, in 60 seconds, it progressed him along a little bit on his personal, you know, at home front.
Gave her more time to sleep. But it also, it was worth noting that she didn't ask him for help when he probably would have done a lot more than Al would have, Paperboy.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
But she probably has to present this this front to earn
better than that,
that she has her life in control and her affairs in order.
It's a very good point. Any thoughts moving forward?
Just keep plugging away. I love that show. Can't wait for next week.
I think it's only a 10-episode season.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I could be wrong, but
we better get
the case. We only have like four left. Four.
Yeah.
We better get the one Darius episode. We better get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a hell of an episode. I'll tell you right now. Very cool. Let's talk about American Horror Story. Oh, we're on episode four this week, chapter four. And Chris, still not on board?
Nope.
Chris.
I'm happy flying above the clouds on this one.
We're going to have to make our discussion of this so intriguing, like so glowing. That Chris has to jump.
That's hard.
Jump
this isn't Horror the week story. To do it because not its finest hour.
I would agree.
As I suspected.
I had a little trouble. I had a little trouble with it. Although, I mean, the story certainly moved along. There was a whole lot of gruesome... gruesome stuff.
That scene at the end, there was a literal disembowelment.
Yeah.
Shown, presented in intimate detail.
Yeah, wow. I just watched the movie Pusher 3 where that happens as well. It's very gross.
Wow. Did they do it with like a hay hook?
No, it was like a butcher. It was like a butcher knife.
There was a butcher knife involved in our disembowelment.
Then there was a trash, like a
was it, did a the disposal. Butcher knife it, the butcher knife made the initial incision.
That's what I believe
happened.
And then
happened, they used that hay hook like hay. To sort of dig in there and yank it out slowly. Yeah.
And he looked like he was having a great time.
So I assume these are the Roanoke survivors.
No, I'm sorry. This was the end of episode four of Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I missed the stinger.
Yeah. No, this was Roanoke. So I guess to me, the big things that happened this episode is the doctor from the videotapes.
Yes. Played by Dennis O'Hare.
So they found videotapes in like the basement of this doctor that was sort of in previous episode, sort of explaining what's going on with the house. Although I believe at the end of those videotapes, it was pretty it seemed like he died.
Yeah, it was like, pretty heavily implied that he was gone, which we probably should have known better because Dennis O'Hare is in the main credits of the show.
He looks so well kept. Like my question is, where has he been? Like all this shit has been going on, all this stuff like in the news.
He does kind of dump his entire like life's history on us in one of American Horror Story's signature exposition dump scenes.
But has this man been like hiding? Like has he been in some other town? Has he just been roaming the grounds of the house and he decided to walk in
time? He returned for the blood moon cycle of six night blood moon.
Of course,
cycle.
Yeah.
Of course.
So the way he's introduced, Chris, is that what's her name?
Shelby.
Shelby is
that her name?
I believe
Sarah
so.
Paulson.
Yeah, it's Shelby. She's taking a shower, and we have
Piggy Man,
the Mr. Piggy Man.
Remember Piggy Man, Chris, from season one?
Piggy.
I believe that is it. Doctor Elias. The doctor actually, I think, whatever, refers to him as Mr. Piggy.
So it's that Mr. explicitly Piggy. Connected.
Yeah, I think that's clear connection to season one.
Cool.
Is Mr. Piggy Man.
Nice. Is that a connection? Because I was reading another thing. So the doctor comes out and kicks the pig's ass with some sort of attack to the back and then yells Croatoan.
Croatoan!
Yeah.
And then they dissipate.
and he disappears. And then he goes into sort of more explaining his whole knowledge of the house and what happened. He discusses the previous tenants or the previous owners of the house. And I was reading that one of the owners has the same last name as someone in a previous season.
Remember the Motts? Remember Dandy from Freak Show?
Oh, wow.
Dandy Mott.
Is it supposed to be the same person? Is that what it is?
It's the same
family.
I guess the
I, of course, haven't watched
the original builder day. Of the home, I believe, bared the last name Mott, who is an ancestor of Dandy.
Okay.
And we learn about he's one of these three
Freak
examples.
Freak Show Connection, episode 4, ties to season 4 Freak Show.
That's pretty true. Good.
More in line with that theory we discussed last week.
Wow.
So we learn about, and there was talk of a hotel in this episode. The psychic, what's his name? Cricket, yes. Cricket. He says he has to go back to his hotel.
I don't know if he'll make it.
I think we know now. But we get this background story of all these families. It was really a lot of background, a lot of just explaining how everyone goes missing. And everyone, Chris, always goes missing at this specific time.
The blood moon?
The spirits and evil entities that surround the house, they're free to, like, taunt you at any point during the year. And taunt and harass and mm-hmm. sort of fuck up your life. But it's not until this 6-day blood moon cycle that they're allowed to actually kill you.
See, that's kind of weird because in past American Horror Story seasons, they've made such a big deal about Halloween. Now, Halloween is the one
Halloween
day a year.
Halloween is the one night of the year where the ghosts are free to leave their home.
Yeah.
Their home base. To go out into the world.
So now there's Halloween and there's this 6-day.
But as soon as Dr. Elias was introduced, he is gruesomely killed.
Which, again, I would expect him to come back because Dennis O'Hare still remains a part of the main credit.
They could find more tapes.
They could find more tapes. So
that's
sure
true.
Can I just say, though, that this episode exemplified, I think, more than any other of the previous three, exemplified what I call bad American Horror Story syndrome.
Okay.
In which the tone, the eerie atmosphere, the decent plotting and introduction of these characters sort of gives way to just the lazy, convoluted, incoherent, like, ramblings. the just exposition dumps and backstory just nonsense that we just hit over the head with because they decide at some arbitrary point in the season, okay, now is the time to just throw all this bullshit past at you in the clunkiest way, just least narratively satisfying way possible.
Yeah.
We're just going to convey this story of this colony and the Lady Gaga tree witch.
I mean, yeah, we got her backstory. We got more of the butcher backstory. Oh, wow. We got
the entire backstory of the colony, believe.
Could that lead more credence to the theory that, like, there's one more episode left and then the entire season gets shifted on its head?
I can't wait to get to that point because I'm about to my end.
Well, they might have to get all this out of the way in order to do this crazy shift that's about to happen where they need to explain even more stuff.
And I've got to say, disembowelment of Cricket, that'll teach him to try to get paid for his quality work, I guess. The man's just trying to make a living.
Do you think he was fronted that $25K?
Is it in some bank account
because
somewhere?
Because if not, he will have died in the most gruesome way imaginable, down $25. He never got it.
What's the possibility that this whole thing, that the big switch that's coming after episode 5 is that we're just following this man's efforts to go into towns, get $25,000, pretend to be disemboweled, and then get the hell out? Chris, thoughts?
I would watch.
I am gearing up for that possibility that this entire thing is just an elaborate ruse to get these people out of the house.
That would be crazy. That would be crazy.
Maybe Dennis O'Hare isn't really dead. Maybe Cricket wasn't disemboweled.
Oh my gosh. Right. And then I guess the one other thing we should mention is that at the end we get Flora.
Oh yeah, Flora returns.
And there's sort of this moment where they try, Cuba Gooding, right, attempts to make a deal with the butcher and she says no, but then the dead girl pushes her and allows Flora to run back. So Flora,
they run, they get Flora, they're outside, they run not to their car to drive away, they run back into the house. Okay, didn't make much sense. And that's, I just have point to mention this though about the butcher played by Kathy Bates, who I think is having a lot of fun using like this crazy like Cockney Irish whatever accent. She has a son in the show played by Wes Bentley, who was on last, it's been in the last two seasons, but he was really the main character of last season. Oh. I thought he was horrible last year.
Was he the cop?
What?
Was he the cop last season?
Yeah, he was the 10th commandments. Okay.
Who does he play in this?
He plays her son.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely awful. it's his accent. He's also trying to replicate Kathy Bates' accent. It is so stiff. It is so wooden. It is just unimaginable that he's being asked to do this and that he's giving as little effort into doing it.
This is awkward. We're having him on next week. No.
I don't think he's a very good actor. I'm sorry.
Maybe.
How could you?
Please, Kathy Bates' son, reach out to us, and we'd love to have you talk to Mike and see where that takes us. But yeah, American Horror Story. Man, this was the worst episode for me. I'm intrigued.
It wasn't without its exciting moments. I thought the first half with Dr. Elias was pretty engaging.
It was cool.
It was kind of fun to see them chased off into chase out into the woods.
And see all the colony people. Yeah, they were all hanging out in the woods. All the people that had disappeared.
When Shelby first spots Lady Gaga, the tree witch, in the forest, she looked like a menacing figure that I wanted no part of. that was fun, but then I think once he got it, and then the rest of the episode just kind of slugged on.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's spice things up. Do a couple quick hits, huh?
All right.
Let's try a forget. Let's try to forget about the down.
I can think of one real spicy show that I know you two boys watch.
Oh.
Designated Survivor.
I don't know if I'd call Designated Survivor spicy, Chris. but we're on episode 3, Designated Survivor. Mike, I mentioned this to you before. You must be pleased. We got a little bit of Dead President's family. We got the son.
We got the bare minimum. This was the week that we got the dead president's funeral,
and it was rough.
And it was
in every aspect of the word.
Every aspect it was portrayed pretty terribly.
Kiefer wasn't pleased.
His estranged son returns, and it's pretty awful. They make the bare minimum mention of his dead wife and the son's dead mother. There's only one casket that is presented at the time of.
Yeah, that was the weirdest part. You mentioned that to me before, like no mention of the wife, no mention of anything. The son's given the eulogy, doesn't speak a word about his dead mom. Like unbelievable. Oh man. And I get like the big theme, I guess, throughout this episode was just President Kirkman, right, is making some enemies. Like there's a force that he's not a legitimate president because he was going to be fired.
Of course, yeah.
And there's a congresswoman that seems to be sort of the leading force to step up against him. And the son, in fact, like, throws his support behind the congresswoman by having her speak at the funeral instead of President Kirkman. So that was sort of a thread. We fit a lot into this episode. There was a White House hack. There was all this drama with who he was going to pick as his chief of staff, and then also with the person he picked was doing some shady stuff. He had the interview with the TV woman. I feel like this is a 3-hour long epic. Really, it was pretty short. And then on top of all of this, as you mentioned, they are still stuffing in those storylines with the teenage son. Oh, they will not stop.
Oh my God. The mother finds the drugs. She finds the money.
Drugs in the White House?
Drugs in the White House, Chris.
They have a scene where the son runs away back to their family home, wherever that is. Yeah. And the mother chases him off.
Just complete shit.
I remember this from last week. Was there any talk of a vice president?
Not a mention. They found very briefly and broadly about filling the cabinet.
Yeah, we didn't have time to cover that this week, Chris.
They haven't once mentioned the plan of succession for Kirkman if something were to happen to him. I assume it would be.
I mean, I'll say that. And then the big sort of crazy thing at the end of the episode is, I mean, there was a nice moment where they're trying to figure out who did it, and his, like, main enemy, the general guy, still is like, this is who did it. We need an enemy. And
which
then,
I don't believe is genuine. I think he's trying to sabotage his credibility, isn't he?
Yeah, you think he's just trying
to make him go after the wrong person?
He's trying to make him declare possibly like an incorrect enemy, so he would have some ground to stand on in his efforts to remove him as president.
But then there's mention that maybe the general released the video.
It wasn't the general.
But then Kirkman goes like, no, that's not his style, as if to let us know that he believes that he is, while he doesn't agree with him, that he is genuine. And then the big sort of reveal is that they uncover, they find out that the feed to the State of the Union where everyone was killed, it cut out 30 seconds before it actually happened. The feed cut out, and then they get some grainy cell phone video. There's a whole story about, like, can we go illegal and get this woman's video?
They find a surviving person. I believe it was a congressman.
Yeah.
And revealed that he survived because he wasn't there at the time of the bombing.
He disappeared from the room seconds before the bombing happened. And the feed cut out so we wouldn't see him leave. But let's see. It's going somewhere. It's going somewhere.
I have another question I have to ask, similar to my question last week. Is that you'd have to think the night of the State of the Union at the state capitol is probably the most highly secured event in, like, the country's history. Like, every year they have every single branch of government in attendance.
Yeah.
So the security must be unlike anything at the time.
Yeah. It's gotta be the most secured event in the world.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And even with that, whoever did it found a way to blow it up.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that the White House currently is a safe spot to to keep the president and his family?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Like, who's to say that whoever blew up the Capitol couldn't do the same to the White House, especially because it's probably not being guarded as heavily.
And not only that.
On a day-to-day basis, it can't be. It's impossible.
They successfully hacked into the White House at the beginning of this episode, turned the power off, got access to all the computers, and they're still there doing business in the White House.
Get out of there. Well, the president needs to be at an undisclosed location underground.
This is what I thought. I thought right when this happened, Kiefer should have been in Air Force One flying. None of that shit should have been happening in the White House. That was crazy that they were doing that in the White
House. The show is just, it is straining its credibility on a week-to-week basis.
You know what? It's stressing me out.
It is just so thin, every aspect of the show, and I'm not sure I have more patience to continue.
Well, I'm gonna follow up next week, but let's move on. Mike, you watched Shameless?
Oh yeah, Shameless is back. Probably one of my favorite shows on TV. Not necessarily because I think it's one of the best shows on TV, but it's just such a welcoming family, as dark and nasty as it can be. It's still at its heart is this really lovely family drama, comedy, whatever. And it peaked probably a couple years ago. Season 4 was really its prize year. It's kind of been going downward in terms of quality in the last couple of years, mainly just because of the storylines that it had been caught up in. There was just a lot of unseemly plots that the show had been following that really weren't serving its characters too well. But finally, I think towards the end of last season, it kind of brought those to a conclusion.
What season is this?
This is season 7.
Okay.
So it brought them to a head. The show is finally out from under those less great plot lines, and it's ready to sort of move in a completely different direction. It's not, I wouldn't call it a reboot, but it certainly is at a much different, more positive place.
It's refreshed.
And yeah, it feels revived in a way that is refreshing, and I am excited. I thought the premiere was great. I thought it opened with this extremely artful, ambitious dream sequence involving Frank, played by William H. Macy, navigating his entire life, his children flashing before his eyes as he's floating in water. Terrific, terrific scene. And yeah, I'm so glad it's back.
That's great. So is there any indication that this could be nearing final season, or
this won't be its last season? I think there are talks about next season being its final. I have no problem. You know how Showtime loves to get the most out of their shows,
for better or worse.
But yeah,
cool. So you'll be following along, and you'll let us know what's up, right?
Oh yeah.
How about you, Chris? You got a quick hit for us?
I do. So, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, or just Evil Dead, returned for season 2 this week.
Just Evil Dead?
It's Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Not the Evil Dead.
Oh, okay.
Just a little semantics there. So,
thanks for clearing that up.
Thank you, thank you. You know, someone will comment on the show, you know, it's Evil Dead, not the Evil Dead.
I know.
Want to get out ahead of them.
Anyway, you gotta get right.
Okay, so.
Plain and simple.
Loved the first season. I loved Army of Darkness, and I couldn't wait for the second season to come back. And, you know, the whole first season was kind of, it's a TV show now, so it's introducing these new side characters into this universe. And the whole first season, to me at least, was getting used to these new characters. And now with season 2, we're set. Now they're part of the universe in my mind. And it's just kind of having fun with these characters. And it's as violent and it's as funny as any of the movies in their best moments. Excited to see where it goes.
How deep are we in?
Well, just one episode.
Okay.
And neither of you guys watched the movies or
I saw the remake.
Shows, right? Yeah. Remake was all right. It wasn't anywhere close, but in a weird way, the second one is like a remake of the first one in a weird way, too. That whole series is a weird past.
Okay.
But yeah, Bruce Campbell is a national treasure. I love that man. Yeah. Go watch it.
Very cool. Keep us updated.
We'll do.
How about Transparent? You guys both watch it, or?
Yes, yeah, so we both finished the...
I watched it in 3 days.
I watched it in like 2.5 or so.
Ooh, Chris got you beat. He watched it in only 2.5 days.
Might have been more. Usually with these streaming shows, I like to meter it out.
Sure.
But now with this show, you know, you gotta be on the ball.
Now, I've never seen an episode of this. Is this season 3?
Season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay.
Just came back about the story of this family dealing with their father transitioning into a woman, played by Jeffrey Tambor. And it really is a delightful show. It's a sad show. It's an intimate show. It's a spiritual show. Jeffrey Tambor, really, is giving one of the best performances on TV.
Yeah, he's amazing.
As Mora. And third season's back. Watched the entire thing. Really liked it. It's always going to be a show that needles you. It can be frustrating at times. It can devote time to certain things that you might not be as interested in.
Yeah.
As other things. But overall, I would say it was certainly a success. I don't know if it was as great as the previous two. Certainly not as great as the first season.
Yeah.
But still a really, really solid season.
What are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, the first season, I agree with Mike, but the first season has this unique aspect to it of like breaking it to people, coming out to people that Mora is transitioning into this new person, or the person that she feels she really is. And obviously, as the season goes on, people get more used to or more against that. So, you know, you lose that uniqueness. But really, why I love this show is that it really, every episode and every season is just, it's so unique in how it deals with the minutiae of relationships in all aspects, in every kind of relationship you could have.
Yep.
The different sexual orientations, relationship between sister and brother, brother and mother, everything. And it's just so intimate. But something I do with every Amazon show that comes out is I ask myself, is this as good as Transparent? Because I think Transparent is the highest bar for Amazon streaming. And so far, nothing has come close. I don't count Fleabag, because Fleabag is a BBC production.
Those are some high standards.
Yep. Fleabag was very well done, but still not, I don't think, to the level of at least the first season of Transparent. But, and it still tops that list. This season, the thing I really like about season two and in this season is that now they're kind of focusing on how, yes, you are this person, but your sex doesn't define you. You can still, just because you're in this transition doesn't mean that you can't be the quote unquote bad guy in an argument. You don't have to win every argument just because you're like this. You're still a person just like everyone else. You have bad days and good days. And we see that a lot with Mora. I think in one of the first few episodes, she talks about how, like, all my kids are doing great. I'm out. I'm transitioning, or I have transitioned, and I'm on this path that I've always wanted to be on my entire life, but somehow I still feel depressed.
Why am I so unhappy?
Yeah, why am I so unhappy? And I think that's kind of, it's a good springboard for the entire season of just analyzing your own thoughts and your own feelings, and it's a show that does it like really no other.
One thing that has been sort of interesting to watch the show navigate with really from the beginning is when we first meet these characters, Mora is sort of presented as, I don't want to say angelic, but certainly of a higher standard of being than her children.
Yeah.
Her children are very selfish.
For sure, yeah.
They're in many ways very unlikable people. But over time, it's sort of introducing this idea that they are that way because of their upbringing from Mora and their mother, Shelley. Like, their parents are in many ways just as much, if not worse, they carry these kind of traits and characteristics as their kids. And I thought this season really explored that more than any other. Like, Mora is, in many instances throughout the season, absolutely awful to the people in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that the show can be difficult to watch at times, because you're just watching this group of people just so difficult, so at odds with the world.
And who are Mora is genuinely suffering and has this legitimate suffering that's going on, but she's still, like, it doesn't mean that you should be nice to this person, or it's this push and pull that's really interesting. I will say one thing I didn't like about this season, the Shelley side. side scrolling.
Oh, I disagree.
It was. It's time. See, three seasons in, it's time to flesh out this character. But I don't think it was done particularly well.
I disagree, Chris.
I thought Shelly was the
MVP of the season.
I think she could have been if it was done better.
I thought, just seeing her struggle with just all the people in her life constantly diminishing her value, constantly lying to her. Really, from the time she was a child, when in that amazing flashback episode to Maura as a child and Shelly as a child. Really, the episode should have been titled like "How Maura Met Shelly," vice versa. Just to see that she herself was sexually abused and lied to and treated poorly as a kid, to see that reflected in her life as an elderly-ish woman, to see that reflected in the upbringing of her children, I thought was really illuminating. And to see this show, the season culminate in this show and shell, this performance,
that's,
this one
that's where I
show
think it falters
from
a bit.
Shelly during the family cruise, I thought was really satisfying.
I love the flashbacks. I like how they reuse actors in flashbacks. It's really powerful.
As the mother.
And last season too, some awesome flashbacks to the time over in Europe, the European flashbacks, which I thought were really cool. Which actually there's a callback to it when she's teaching the class. Where I think the Shelly thing falters is on the cruise and in the current day timeline. I think it's a little bit ridiculous how her character is just the way she, I guess I'm not articulating it well, but it, I just find how she reacts to certain things, like how she reacts to these characters, her hubby using her money to buy all these things, is a little bit unrealistic. I think she would have caught on by then, and her daughter comes and tells her.
She explains it. He made her happy. So she was willing. That was a trade-off she was willing to take.
Yeah.
And then that speech she gives to her children about how they disregard her and they disrespect her. It was.
Yeah, symbolically it worked. Just don't think it worked.
Her children, I think, cases are awful people. One thing I think that this season, really the last two seasons, have been doing that isn't as great as what we saw in the first, is that I thought so much of the first season had the focus solely on Maura and her experience.
Yeah.
The Maura show.
Yeah.
That works so well. I think the show is always for the better when it is at its base, the Maura show. But the last few seasons have really been more at times the Maura's kids show, who I just find genuinely less interesting than Maura.
Yeah.
But the continued focus of Shelly this season, and hopefully for future seasons, really worked, which is why I think this season was probably a little bit better than the last. And also the continued presence of Catherine Hahn's character, Rabbi Raquel, who I think is
starting out the season,
such a delight.
Yeah, she's great.
So glad she was a huge part of the season.
Yeah, especially because they could have written her out of the show after what happened last season.
She could have been.
Easily.
She is like the embodiment of the spirit, literally the spiritual side of the show.
Yeah.
And so much of that part of the show comes out through her character.
But when you say spiritual, it's not like daunting spiritual, it's like welcoming spiritual. She's never preachy.
No.
It's like spiritual in the more.
And there was that great scene with Sarah, the eldest daughter, when she, in the church, when she asks what does spirituality mean to you, and she couldn't even answer it.
Yeah,
and that just gave credence to that freak out that she had. What was she reeling from?
Sarah? I don't remember what she was reeling from. I know Sarah had gotten to her head at one point.
I loved that the follow-up to this season was like she was suffering such serious depression from the loss of her...
unborn child.
Loss of her unborn child last season, which was... I'm glad the show delved deeper into that.
What are we looking forward to for next season? Thoughts moving forward?
Well, that's that. At the beginning of this season, they I won't ruin it, but at the beginning of this season, they posit a big change in Mora's life that Mora wants, and they kind of end cap it at this season, and there's really nowhere, unless something crazy happens, I really can't see them bringing it up again.
That was sort of her journey this season, is just very bluntly stating that she wants something at the start, and then by the end is told she can't have it.
Yeah.
So I think next season is going to, a lot of it will be about her dealing with that, her coming to terms with the person that she's going to likely be for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
We'll have to see where it goes.
Yep.
Let's talk about what we're going to be watching for next week, huh? Definitely, we'll watch Westworld. We'll watch Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Those are two slam dunks for us.
Yep. Tried and true.
Some of us will be watching American Horror Story.
Good luck.
Possibly even less of us will be watching Designated Survivor.
I think I'll be back.
Maybe I'll pick it up. Just kidding.
I do think we should try to get caught up on This Is Us. Check back in with that.
I will. Yeah, let's do that.
Awesome. We'll do a little talk about that next week. Anything else? Any quick hits for next week?
I'll keep watching Ash vs. Evil Dead.
I'm gonna keep up with The Good Place. Any other shows that I watch?
Shameless,
of course.
I'll say I've been watching The Strain. So we'll see if I get.
How dare you mention The Strain?
I'll see if I get fully caught up for next week. I might talk about that a bit. Mike, let us know where can we visit you online?
At linguistics_ on Twitter.
And Chris?
At ThatMorris, ThatMorris on Twitter.
Beautiful. You can find me, therealjeffmoore.com. Remember to rate and subscribe to us. Let us know what you think. If you have any comments or want to get in touch at all, you can email us screeningclub@gmail.com. And until then, thanks for joining us again, and we will see you next week.
See ya.
Bye. God bless.